Hey, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thank you for tuning in. We have another one of those programs tonight, so I hope you're going to stick around for a while. Well, the hits just keep on coming, don't they? Speaking of hits, remember a couple of weeks ago, Brad Friedman joined us from bradblog.com. What we're going to talk about here in a moment is all out there at his website, bradblog.com. We were talking about Sybelle Edmonds, the FBI translator turned whistleblower, who was finally allowed to speak about what she knew about the Bush administration. All sorts of stuff from Ohio election fraud to congressional blackmail, bribery, espionage, infiltration, and more. It's all there. And Brad joins us now from his hideaway on the West Coast. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. I looked at this at your website. Of course, it was after ABC, CBS, and NBC all led with this story.
Yeah.
that Sybelle Edmonds had finally really revealed the truth, and CNN picked up on it, MSNBC. Nobody picked up on it that I'm aware of except you. So do you want to bring everybody up to date on the Sybelle Edmonds story?
We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, that she was called in for this deposition in this Ohio case, an Ohio election case between Congresswoman Mean Gene Schmidt,
mm-hmm.
the second Ohio district,
right.
And her challenger, David Krikorian, who said during the campaign last year that she was accepting blood money from Turkish interests, and she became the co-chair of the Turkish caucus in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's brought a complaint before the Ohio Election Commission, which has allowed Krikorian then to ask the infamous FBI whistleblower, Sybelle Edmonds, who has been gagged for years by two invocations of the state's secrets privilege,
mm-hmm.
under the George W. Bush Department of Justice, and to ask her, she was subpoenaed to answer questions concerning the Turkish influence, essentially, on the U.S. government and on current and former Congress members,
mm-hmm.
both men and women, frankly,
right.
of both parties,
right.
And some very high-ranking officials. Now, she gave her deposition. There was talk that she would be stopped by the Obama DOJ, that they would invoke the state secrets privilege. They did not. And so she was able to answer all the questions pretty much that she was asked for. I think the session went on for about 3 or 4 hours.
Now, when was this testimony given, Brad?
This was about 2 weeks ago, August 8th.
Okay.
And I was sort of covering it live. She was in D.C. This session took place in D.C. I was in Los Angeles, but I had folks on the ground out there, and so I was sort of live blogging it from out here. And, you know, they were coming out and speaking to whatever few media were there, including, mm-hmm. you know, the Brad blog and about 3 or 4 others. Throughout the day, they would come out, you know, during breaks and so forth, and give information. David Krikorian, the candidate who's being, you know, challenged in this suit by Gene Schmidt, was just appeared to be stunned by the information that was coming out of the deposition, out of the testimony under oath about specifically named Congress members and high-ranking officials. He talked about it. He named some of the names then. Sybelle Edmonds, during some of the breaks, also gave some of the information about what was coming out. But it was, by and large, their opinions or their sort of secondhand reporting of what was being said in that deposition.
Mm-hmm.
So we covered it, and there was some alarming stuff. You and I talked about some of it. We can get into it in a second. But coverage across the world, Pakistan, Turkey, they covered this deposition and the mm-hmm. fact that she was speaking for the first time. Almost no one in the U.S. touched it. Well, I thought to myself, well, I guess that's because, the deposition itself, the transcript is not out. The videotape of the deposition, it was all videotaped, was not out. Surely once that information comes out and they can see the details of the people we're talking about, the types of crimes that we're talking about, the high-ranking officials we're talking about, surely that would, as you said, lead ABC, NBC, well, CBS, and all the rest.
Yeah, especially with the names that you have at your website. Among those named by Sybil Edmonds as part of a broad criminal conspiracy, Representatives Dennis Hastert, Republican of Illinois, who's no longer there, Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, Roy Blunt, Republican of Missouri, Bob Livingston, Republican of Louisiana, Stephen Solars, Democrat of New York, Tom Lantos, Democrat of California. And then you add this little intriguing bit, as well as an unnamed, still serving female member of Congress, a Democrat, said to have been secretly videotaped for blackmail purposes during a lesbian affair. Also, high-rank officials in the Bush administration named in Sybil's testimony as part of this criminal conspiracy include Douglas Feith, Paul Wolfowitz, Mark Grossman, and others. Holy Toledo!
You would think, if nothing else, the media would be entertained by the, Chuck Todd put it, the cable catnip?
Yeah, cable catnip aspect.
That's right.
Yeah.
Of the, you know, the lesbian affair of the unnamed
Democrat. Yeah, and she's a Democrat. I would think Fox would be all over this.
There you go. You would think. And she's the only one, by the way, who is not named, because Sybil has said that she's not, in fact, certain that, though she is certain, apparently, that she was videotaped,
mm-hmm,
having sex with this Turkish agent. And mind you, she's a woman who is married, has children. Sybil did not know, you know, in fact, whether they had used this blackmail against her,
mm-hmm,
whether she had folded to it, whether they had even let her know that she was being videotaped. So, in other words, we don't know if she actually did anything wrong, other than, I guess, having an affair. But, mm-hmm, you know, that's not for me to judge. So she didn't want to put her name on the record, but you would think that would certainly draw the media.
That usually draws the media flies. As soon as you have a something that they can identify as a dung heap, they're right,
yep,
there. But what about I didn't know Bob Livingston was still a member of Congress. Is he?
No, he's not anymore. He was going to be the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, until they found out that he had put his penis where it doesn't belong.
That's exactly right.
Roy Blunt, he's still around.
Roy Blunt is around. I believe he's about to run for governor.
Dan Burton is. Stephen Solar. No, he's gone, isn't he?
He is gone. He's now, like the other ones who are gone, working for a Turkish lobbyist.
Fancy that.
As is Dennis Hastert. And by the way, as if the unnamed Democratic woman lesbian affair was not enough, Dennis Hastert has apparently, according to the transcript now, which we have in full, transcript, the complete videotape, we've got all of it on BradBlog for anybody to see. And, you know, you can judge for yourself how credible she is. You can read the transcript. You can look at the video.
Right.
But Hastert apparently... and I'm still working through a lot of this deposition, by the way, but Hastert apparently carried on certain what she calls immoral activities, or what people would view as immoral activities, in a townhouse in D.C.
Oh, my God.
Now, shouldn't that get someone's attention? The fact that he's taken something like $500,000, according to her allegations, from Turkish interest, Turkish drug interest, but hell, the sex alone usually does the trick.
That usually does the trick. Where are all the investigative reporters who used to jump 10 feet up in the air when they found criminal activity on the part of members or former members of Congress? What the hell is going on, Brad? It is a conspiracy of silence, isn't it?
I suppose if Dick Cheney or someone on Fox News made such an allegation, that would count. The fact that you've got an FBI translator turned whistleblower who was gagged. Mind you, she was twice gagged by the Bush Department of Justice, by the Bush White House. If she had nothing here, if she was crazy, why would they go to such an extent to gag her in the first place?
Yeah.
So her allegations, I guess, don't count. Dick Cheney's and the other losers over at Fox News and so forth, that counts just fine. Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe one of them will talk about it. If somebody on Fox talks about it, then the
bobbleheads will know about it. Hey, hold on a second, Brad. Let me put you on hold. We're going to take a quick break and come back. One more short segment with Brad Friedman about the Sybil Edmonds testimony. By the way, Brad is going to be filling in for us the week of Labor Day once again. He did such a stellar job last time. We have begged him to do it again.
Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come.
This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it's our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Past the hour, we're talking with Brad Friedman once again about the Sybelle Edmonds situation. She finally was allowed to testify in a case in Ohio, and you can see and read the entire testimony. I think Brad has it in video in three or four segments at his website, or five segments plus the transcript, to find out what she's talking about and why Brad Friedman has been following this all these years. This is stuff that should be lead stories on television news, and of course it is not. Go to bradblog.com. Now, what are the implications so far as you can gather, Brad, about her testimony?
You've got an extraordinary conspiracy of criminals and of folks in, mind you, her, Sybelle Edmonds, she was listening to wiretaps only up through 2002. So a lot of this stuff may still be going on, with other Congress members, but what you've got is Congress members who are compromised either for money or because they're being blackmailed, like the Congresswoman we talked about, videotaped having an affair. This is going on. This is compromising not only what's going on in the House, in the Senate, as far as votes go, but Sybelle Edmonds also talks about weapons procurement, nuclear weapons.
Oh, God.
Getting out to the black market, to the nuclear black market, to our friends and enemies alike. I mean, this is a very serious business. It seems that it should be investigated. The Inspector General, the FBI Inspector General, looked at her complaints when she made them initially back in 2002 and said they're serious, they're credible, they warrant investigation. Senators Grassley and Leahy have both said the same. As did Waxman.
At
one point.
That was the 60 Minutes segment, right?
That's right. They did a segment on 60 Minutes in 2002. Waxman, since then, Henry Waxman, had promised before the Democrats got into the majority that he was one of the first things he was going to do was have hearings on her case.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, he has not refused to have hearings. Apparently, he has simply refused to say anything, refused to contact her back, and it just sits there. That's why it's so important, frankly, for media coverage, why I'm so grateful that you at least picked up on it today. But I would ask readers, listeners out there, to go check out the story, to dig it, to Reddit it, to send it to the media,
mm-hmm.
and to demand someone looks into this goddamn story.
Is there any chance that you'll put out a press release that you'll do something, get something in the hands of a mainstream media, so called?
You know, I'm going to try. I mean, my blog goes out into the hands of the mainstream
media.
I've got a huge media list. They pick it up. They know about it. What they do about it is another matter. Now, what I may have to do is sort of go through this and do the, you know, cut this up into baby bites,
right,
so to speak,
right,
and put out bits and pieces from the testimony on the specific topics and just keep pumping it out there until someone takes a look. Look, if Sybelle Edmonds is crazy, if she's a liar, it ought to be easy to dispatch with her allegations. Somebody ought to be able to look into them and say they're complete and utter nonsense, and here's why,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll be done with it. But it seems hard to believe that the Bush administration would have gone to such ends to shut her up
mm-hmm.
if there was nothing here.
Yeah, it's just astonishing to me. The part of this whole story, Brad, not just the revelations, not just the information she has, not just the fact that she's a key witness, in so many of these episodes, two things are astonishing to me. First of all, she's still alive.
Yeah.
Secondly, is that nobody other than you, seems to, and a couple other, who else is doing this story at all? I think Larissa Alexandrovna over at Raw Story, but I think she's getting everything from you, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, no, she was doing a lot of this work on her own.
Was she?
Some of her own stories that crossed over. Yeah, because we've got crossovers into Valerie Plame and Brewster Jennings.
Right,
here.
Well, other than the two of you, who in the hell is doing anything?
Well, actually, let me give credit to Luke Ryland, again, another citizen journalist. He's actually out in New Zealand. He keeps covering this. He keeps putting it out. But, you know, we had 60 Minutes back in 2002. We had Vanity Fair back in 2005. Both of them put out these extraordinary exposés before she could actually say anything on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody followed it up. The only people who are doing anything, right now I understand the Sunday Times of London is once again working on a story on this. We've got to go overseas to get any coverage about our own country, our own highest officials, you know, selling nuclear secrets to enemies. We got to go overseas to have this story told. It is remarkable.
It is.
All right. But let me say, I'm one guy. Luke Ryland, Larissa Alexandrovna. We're each just, you know, one guy, and yet we're able to get it out there.
Yeah.
If your listeners take this information and drive people crazy with it, demand that somebody look into it or deny it, maybe, just maybe we'll get somewhere.
Maybe so. All right, Brad, thanks a lot. I know you're going to fill in for me. We're about out of time here. I hope you'll cover the story at least one night while you're filling in. Thanks a lot, pal.
My pleasure, my friend. Look forward to it.
All right, take care. Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Go to his website and check this out. You're not going to believe it.
Nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Boy, Dick Cheney is just the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he? This crazed sociopath. Now he's saying that the Obama administration's decision to name a prosecutor to look into the terror perpetrated by Dick Cheney against people who were swept up or sold to the CIA as possible suspects, that any attempt to look into those criminal violations of the law that were committed against these people by key members of the Bush administration. Dick Cheney says that his decision to do that, Obama's decision to do that, should, quote, foster doubts about this administration's ability to be responsible for our nation's security, end quote. I'll be a son of a bitch. Here is a guy who allowed the worst attack on U.S. soil since the War of 1812. Here is a rat bastard who directed an invasion of a country that did nothing to us, while his buddies and George's buddies in Saudi Arabia just sat back and said, well, yeah, okay, 15 of the 19 bombers that went to the U.S. are from here. That's a good reason to attack Afghanistan, right? Here is a rotten son of a bitch whose company has been stealing the American taxpayer blind and setting up situations for our soldiers in Iraq that guaranteed that they would die or get food poisoning, of being electrocuted, of drinking tainted water with human feces in it. That's what Dick Cheney has been doing. And this pig has the audacity to say that there are now doubts about the Obama administration's ability to be responsible for our nation's security? Oh, my God. Do I use a lot of curse words and profanity when I talk about this son of a bitch? Yes, I really do. And why is that, Mike? Pretty much because it's beyond hatred. I've been hating this guy for probably 25 years. But it's this deliberate attempt to avoid responsibility for what he did. and what the United States is going to continue to pay for, literally and metaphorically, for probably the next 50 years or longer. And this rotten, filthy man, this Dick Cheney, is now saying that the people who he directed and his scum directed to violate not just American law, not just criminal law, not just international law and treaties, but also they unwound everything that was wound up at Nuremberg. That's what they did. This is what this filthy old man did. And now he says that the people involved, that would be you, right, Dick, deserve our gratitude. He said, quote, they do not deserve to be the targets of political investigations or prosecutions, end quote. The key obfuscating word there, of course, is political. This is not a political investigation, you filthy old man. This is not a political prosecution, you filthy old man. This is a criminal investigation. And you and your cohort were the criminals. Oh, my God. Cheney maintains that records released this week, according to Mike Allen at Politico.com, show that waterboarding and other harsh interrogation techniques, quote, provided the bulk of intelligence we gained about Al-Qaeda, end quote, after the September 11 attacks. Now, we all know that's a lie. Everybody knows it's a lie, but Cheney also knows that by dumping more of his feces on Fox News and these other right-wing outlets, who will put the word that comes from his filthy mouth out there as if it were gospel, Cheney knows that he can do this and will not be questioned. A 2004 report by the CIA's Inspector General concluded that enhanced interrogation techniques themselves were not effective. Oh, my God. Cheney, this is what Republicans do. This is what neocons, this is what sociopaths do. All sociopaths, not just members of the Bush crime family, but all sociopaths. Somebody says it's blue. And the sociopath will say, well, see, there's your proof that it's red. You just heard him say it's blue. There's your proof. And to a sociopath, that is perfectly rational, logical, linear, sensible. And he hands that out to the bobbleheads, to those willfully ignorant savages who watch Fox News, who immerse themselves in the swill at Free Republic or the rest of these right-wing outfits, knowing, Cheney knows, that when they bathe in more of his filth, they'll continue to believe it. It's incredible. It's incredible. He said, quote, the activities of the CIA in carrying out the policies of the Bush administration, we're directly responsible for defeating all efforts by Al-Qaeda to launch further mass casualty attacks against the United States. Aren't you, like moi, just waiting to see proof of even one of these fantastical events that Cheney keeps referencing? Just any kind of even a shred, a shard, a bit of proof. But it's not there. Of course it's not there. Cheney's trying desperately to cover his own ass. And he's doing fine. I mean, nobody's investigating him. Nobody cares. I mean, come on, Dick. Take a break. How much time do you have left with that machine in your chest? Why don't you just kick back and enjoy your grandchildren and shut the hell up? Why do you have to do this? Nobody cares. You're a war criminal. The people who need to know that you are a criminal, a war criminal, guilty of war crimes, already know it. Man. I don't know. Every day you pick up the paper and you find that Dick Cheney has once again pulled the stake out of his chest. And he's wandering around the heath once again, rattling his chains, leaving that odor of decay and dirt wherever he goes. I would imagine that probably tomorrow he will wind up on the drug addicts radio show, or the suiciders radio show, or the boy who likes to hang out at the bunny ranch's show. And with their incisive questioning, they will allow Dick Cheney to continue to insist that the careful, calculated, responsible efforts of the Bush administration to protect and defend not just the Constitution as per their oaths, but also the American people were just right on target. That terrorist attacks were thwarted and stopped because after 3,000 people died on our soil, well, you know, they learned their lesson. Hey, we better pay attention to those memos, huh? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, chuckle, chuckle, giggle, hoot. Cheney, you're a son of a bitch. You're one of the most vile, vile people this political system has ever spat up on the stage. And I swear to God, you, Kissinger, the rest of you thugs, when you finally take that last step off this mortal coil, I think the planet will be cleaner. Just slightly. Wonder what he'll come up with tomorrow, huh? We were talking, Gary wrote in response to what we were talking about the other night about everything about the Republican Party is death. Death panels, death this, death, what was the rest of them, Kathy? Death panels, you know, just all this death crap. Death, now the death booklet for the service members of the military. Gary writes, in the genesis of all this fear-based rhetoric is the death tax. In the disgusting rubric of the right wing, death is a vital part of the sales hook. Bastards, all of them, Gary. Death this, death that. I've never seen a crew like this. Have you? Have you? Dan in Lawrenceville, Georgia, also, he said, there are two things I read about today that just really made me shake my head in disbelief. Just when you think these dopes couldn't get any worse, which is more ridiculous to you, the fact that Cheney had the nerve to accuse Obama of politicizing the Justice Department, or the fact that Michelle Bachmann is actually calling for prayer and fasting in order to defeat health care reform. Son of a bitch, it doesn't stop, does it? It just doesn't stop. I want to share these with you when we come back. Cheney, in addition to talking about the CIA, is accusing Obama of politicizing the Justice Department. OMFG.
And this bitch's voice must be heard. A sex change is the only certain way to preserve the sanctity of marriage. We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change. Our leadership and resolve can light the way for others. And having come this far, and the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Vice President Cheney. Dick is a killer. Dick is a killer. Dick is a killer. Dick is a killer. Dick, 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 Dick is a killer. Dick is a killer. Dick is a killer.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 10 before the hour. Just got an email from Reg over at TV News Lies. She writes, Wikipedia has updated its site on Sabell's testimony to at least mention the August 8th testimony. Many sites are linking to the story, and the videos are already up on a number of sites. Listeners must link Brad's coverage on their Twitter and Facebook and MySpace pages. I've done that, Reg writes. If everyone does that, it will spread exponentially. So, yeah, that's certainly the way to do it. You can get all the information at bradblog.com. Check it out and then link it on whatever you have. You have Twitter and Facebook and MySpace. Do it. And it will become so goddamn viral that by tomorrow morning, maybe Charlie Gibson might, get a tap on his shoulder from executive producer and say, hey, Charlie, you better put 30 seconds on this story. So that's a good idea. Thanks, Reg. Go to bradblog.com and check this out and then link it, on Twitter, Facebook, and MySpace. And, it will be crawling all over, the planet. All right, back to Dan in Lawrenceville. He writes, the traitor-in-chief, Dick Cheney, had the nerve to accuse Obama of politicizing the Justice Department. And the link is to Huffington Post, where Sam Stein writes, in a statement Monday evening, former Vice President Cheney accused the Obama White House of politicizing the Justice Department. And that would be, of course, about this investigation of the torture routine that Cheney... and I think there's a lot more here than meets the eye. Cheney approved it. Cheney ordered it. Cheney designed it. But I also think Cheney was getting off on it. All these videotapes that have disappeared now, and Obama's, or I'm sorry, Eric Holder's special prosecutor was investigating the disappearance of, what, 90 videotapes of various torture regimes, various torture events. And I think if he looked in Dick Cheney's, under Dick Cheney's bed, I'm sure he would find a steel lockbox. And open it with a court order, of course, got to do this legally. And I think you'll find, in addition to all of Cheney's other porn, you will find that. Cheney is one of those types. He's a torture porn type. I'm also reasonably certain that he is a terror porn a fanatic, the type that likes to look at pictures provided to him by, oh, probably Blackwater, of... casualties of war, you know, children blown to pieces, parents with their guts hanging out. Cheney just impresses me as that type. He digs war porn, and I'm sure he also digs torture porn. Anyway, as Sam Stein says, coming from members of an administration that put well-documented pressure on U.S. attorneys to launch electorally motivated investigations into Democrats, charges of politicizing the Department of Justice are slightly rich. But more importantly, Sam writes, Cheney's remark ignores a consistent theme of the Obama presidency. The White House has repeatedly stressed its preference not to launch an investigation into the use of torture. It would rather look forward, not back. Of course, that is just a super pain in the rear end to progressives and liberals and real Democrats, the fact that Obama refuses to do that. Truly, honestly, deeply, these members of the Bush crime family should, I mean, they went after Clinton because he got his wee-wee caught in a zipper of a dress that belonged to someone other than his wife and then tried to hide it. And the whole goddamn republic came to a halt. Remember that? Oh, and all the little moral midgets marching across the Capitol Rotunda. Oh. And here's an administration that destroyed the country. Destroyed the country. Destroyed it internally. Destroyed our reputation. Destroyed it externally. And so far has sent about 5,000 American men and women to their deaths in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the death toll in Afghanistan is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Or should I say larger and larger and larger. The second thing that Dan wrote about is this crazy, crazy Representative Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota. According to the Minnesota Independent, today she was part of a tele-town hall meeting to discuss health care reform. The event was billed Keeping Faith with the Unborn. And it was sponsored by the Susan B. Anthony List. Oh, that's a takeoff on Emily's List, an anti-abortion advocacy group. The organization's president, Marjorie Dannenfelser, claimed that there were some 350,000 listeners on the line. Mm. Bachmann was joined by North Carolina Representative Virginia Fox. Her claim to fame is she called Matthew Shepard's murder a hoax. Former Colorado Representative Marilyn Musgrave, who made national headlines by refusing to concede after losing her reelection back in November. But even with these kinds of freaks sharing the phone line, Bachman managed to distinguish herself during the 90-minute phone call. She quoted Winston Churchill. She attacked Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius for receiving political contributions from a doctor who was murdered in May. She called on everyone to get down on their knees and pray that health care reform fails. Jesus H. Christ. Bachman repeated the myth that the health care plans being debated in Congress would set up death panels to determine which old folks are entitled to health care. She told the callers, thank God Sarah Palin said that. This is all true. Ah, man. In response to a caller from Minnesota who wanted to know if there was a plan afoot in Washington to require all medical doctors to perform abortions, Bachman danced around it. Can you believe this stuff? But it was Bachman's call, fervent call, to utilize prayer and fasting to beat back healthcare reform efforts that was the true highlight of the call, according to Paul Demko, writing at the Minnesota Independent. He quotes her. She told the listeners, quote, that's really where this battle will be won, on our knees, in prayer and fasting. Remember, faith without works is dead. So we're asking all of you to do that. Pray, fast, believe, trust the Lord, but also act. You left out eat. Oh, you've got fast in there. And you don't think Michelle Bachman is a sociopath? Oy. Emails now from people. Let's see, Sheila at opednews.com also has posted a link to Brad's blog at opednews.com. TV News Lies, opednews.com. I'm sure Raw Story has it. But Reggie's idea of linking it to your Facebook, Twitter, or MySpace page is an excellent idea. We're talking about what Brad has up at his website, bradblog.com. And the entire transcript of that testimony is there, along with five sections of the audio tape or the audio recording tape. The audio recording of that testimony, so check it out. Four more U.S. servicemen were killed in Afghanistan today, a roadside bomb. That makes this year the deadliest year for the how does Reuters put it, the growing contingent of foreign troops. The deaths, of course, are clear indications that this is going to be another, this will be the fifth or sixth attempt by an empire to subdue the Afghans that will end in failure. It's just a question of how many of our soldiers and NATO soldiers who are involved in this are going to die before the Obama administration decides to leave. You know that's the outcome. There is no objective in this war. Whatever it is we're doing there, the objective, loosely stated, is to what? Stop the Taliban from taking back over, or something. I don't know. If anyone knows, Please send me an email what the objective is, when we will know that the objective has been met. We have been there for 8 years. 8 years. And when I say we, I mean a very limited number of Americans are involved in this. More than 30,000 extra U.S. troops arrived there this year. There are now 63,000 American troops and another roughly 40,000 troops from other countries. 63,000 Americans are there. The number of foreign troops who have died in Afghanistan this year is now at 295. That's according to website iCasualties.org. iCasualties.org. Last year, the entire year, 294 were killed. So, and the election, you've been following, I would assume, on the evening news, the results of the election. It is clear as a bell that our puppet in Kabul, Hamid Karzai, a former lobbyist for Unocal Oil in California, our boy in Kabul, tried to rig the election. He didn't quite succeed. It looks like it's going to go to a runoff and look for more violence, more death, more destruction. And once again, the United States, in this crazed, sick attempt at maintaining empire, is going to result in more and more and more deaths of American soldiers and more and more and more wedding parties of Afghans and civilians and villages and kids and old ladies and men in turbans, right? You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Bob Herbert, writing today at the New York Times, he says, if you want to get a little bit of a sense of what wars are like in Afghanistan and Iraq, pick up a book of color photographs called, the title is Second Tour, Hope I Don't Die. The title comes from something that was written on a wall in Kuwait. Bob Herbert writes, most Americans have conveniently put these two absurd, obscene conflicts out of their minds. There's an economy to worry about. Snappy little messages to tweet. Nobody wants to think about young people getting their faces or their limbs blown off. Or the parents, loaded with antidepressants, giving their children and spouses a final hug before heading off in a haze of anxiety to their third or fourth tour in the war zone. The book is the work of the photographer Peter Van Achtmail, who has spent a great deal of time following American combat troops in both countries. One of the photos in the book shows an army captain standing exhausted and seemingly forlorn on the blood-slicked floor of a combat support hospital in Baghdad. Mr. Van Achtmail was sensitive to the heavy psychological load borne by the medical personnel. He wrote in the caption, quote, their humor was dark and their expressions often flat and distant when they treated patients. The worst casualties were given nicknames. One soldier melted by the fire caused by an IED blast was called Goo Man. But certain casualties would hit home, especially children. Some staff resorted to painkillers and other drugs, end quote. Caption under the photo. Bob Herbert writes, the war in Afghanistan made sense once, but it doesn't any longer. The war in Iraq never did. And yet, with most of the country tuned out entirely, we're still suiting up soldiers and the Marines, putting them on planes and sending them off with a high-stakes life-or-death roll of the dice. Or maybe it's the third tour, or the fourth, or the fifth. The book's title, Second Tour, Hope I Don't Die, came from graffiti scrawled on a wall at an Air Force base in Kuwait that was one of the transit points for troops heading to Iraq. America's young fighting men and women have to make these multiple tours because the overwhelming majority of the American people want no part of the nation's wars. They don't want to serve. They don't want to make any sacrifices here on the home front. They don't even want to pay the taxes that would be needed to raise the money to pay for the wars. We just add the trillions to deficits that stretch as far as the eye can see. To the extent that we think about wars at all, it's just long enough to point our fingers at the volunteers and say, oh yeah, great, you go, and if you come back maimed or dead, we'll salute you as a hero. And what are we sending them off to? There's a photo in the book of Nick Spravtsov, the sergeant from Flint, Michigan, lying awake in his bunk at a patrol outpost in Afghanistan. He looks like a tough guy in the pictures, but he also looks worried. The caption under the photo says, on his third tour, he was there to advise a local platoon of the Afghan army. The Afghan soldiers rarely wanted to patrol, preferring to watch DVDs and smoke hash. Their favorite movie was Titanic. And if you remember, in last Sunday's New York Times, there was an article, Marines Fight with Little Aid from Afghans. Why are we there? Do you have any idea, Truth Seeker? Bob Herbert goes on, a clear idea of the pathetic unwillingness of the American people to share in the sacrifices of these wars can be gleaned from a comment that President Obama made in his address last week to the VFW. He said, quote, we are a country of more than 300 million Americans, less than 1% wear the uniform. The president was not chiding those who are not serving. He was only intending to praise those who are. But the idea that so few are willing to serve at a time when the nation is fighting two long wars is a profound indictment on this society. If we had a draft or merely the threat of a draft, we would not be in Iraq or Afghanistan. But we don't have a draft, so it's safe for most of the nation to be mindless about waging war. Other people's children are going to the slaughter. And instead of winding down our involvement in Afghanistan, we're ratcheting it up. President Obama told the VFW that fighting the war there is absolutely essential. He said, quote, this is fundamental to the defense of our people, end quote. Well, if this war, now approaching its ninth year, is so fundamental, we should all be pitching in. We shouldn't be leaving the entire monumental burden to a tiny portion of the population, sending them into combat again and again and again and again. Bob Herbert, New York Times. This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Past the hour. You want to hear something funny? Have you got that piece of Limbaugh audio? This has the N-word in it, and it also has the word balls, so if you're going to be offended, don't listen. But the N-word comes from Jay-Z, from a rap song that just has the pig man totally nonplussed. He doesn't know whether to pee on himself or stuff another OxyContin in his ear. This comes from Chris in Warren, PA, who says, Mike, I thought I heard everything from the right-wing scream machine. Just when I think it can't get any more asinine, by God, Rush Limbaugh makes it more asinine. Here's a link to a short Media Matters clip in which Rush Limbaugh responds to a Jay-Z song telling him, Jay-Z mentions Limbaugh telling him to get off his balls by warning, Limbaugh warns, that the only person going after anyone's penis is President Obama. That's right, forced circumcision. Our worst fears about Obama are confirmed.
I have been mentioned in a rap song by the rapper Jay-Z. Got a new song out there. What's the name of the song? Don't know what the name of the song is. New song out mentions me and the moderate Bill O'Reilly.
Black versus white, my nigga, we all fat. 3 cell Bill O'Reilly to fall back. get off my blog in 2010 or 1864. Here we come so far. How's that for a mix? Got a black president, got green president.
Is this, Snurdly, mark a new development in my career to be singled out on a rap song by the famous rapper Jay-Z? I guess it is. I guess it's, as far as I know, I have never been mentioned in a rap song by anybody. Guess that means I've made it. I'm now in a rap tune by the famous rapper Jay-Z. Tell Rush Limbaugh to get off my balls. Tell Bill O'Reilly to fall back. I would remind the rapper Jay-Z, Mr. Z, it is President Obama who wants mandate circumcision. We had that yesterday,
right,
that means
it's President Obama that wants mandated circumcision. Son of a bitch, they're coming for your penis, boys. Obama wants your penis. What is it with these right wingers? Limbaugh is just fixated on men's genitals. Mostly, he's fixated on sphincter muscles. He's always suggesting that people should or might have bend over and take it that way, grab their ankles over and over. Jesus, Rush, why don't you just be more blatant? Why don't you just come right out and talk about it, you drug-addled freak? Now, on top of the death panels and the death this and the death that, Obama is coming for all the white men's penises. He's coming to you. He's coming with great big pinking shears. He's coming for the penises. And as Kristen Warren, PA, says, so is it official? Has the right wing stooped to every lie imaginable? I'd say they have. But like I said, just when you think it can't get any crazier, this. Oh, my God.
I've been mentioned in a rap song by Mr. Smurdley. Give me another line. Thank you. I've been mentioned. What? No, I'm still deaf. I've been mentioned in a rap song by a Negro person named Jay-Z. And, Mr. Z, it's not... It's not us coming after your balls. It's Barack Obama, forced circumcision. That's
yeah, but Rush, see, I can't. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I keep saying unbelievable. Nah. Roz in Canada writes, the horror of cheaper health care for everybody. She writes, it's patently obvious to me, at least, that some Americans need a mental health evaluation before being allowed to run for government office of any type. The insanity that's running amok in the U.S. now is not to be believed. Have they all gone totally batty? I never thought I'd live to see people terrified of getting cheaper health care for all. They are literally calling on God in the fear. She's referring to Michelle Bachmann. Please, God, save us from universal health care. Roz goes on. You all had better try to rope these idiots before they bring you all down, Mike. The world looks on gobsmacked yet again. I think these type of people mentally live in the 18th century. As for Michelle Bachmann, she needs sedating in a bad way. Regards, Roz. Yeah, Michelle Bachmann wants people to fast and pray to the Lord baby Jesus. Please, Jesus, spare us from cheaper health insurance, huh? We'll be right back.
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap.
It is rap.
I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling. I'm so full of bull, so full of crap.
Full of crap.
With condescending tribes making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic, cuts.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am.
Cause I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Care about the middle class because I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
with the face of a
So do you get the feeling that Grover Norquist's little plan to end America has just about come to fruition? I heard today that the budget deficit this year will be $1.6 trillion. And, of course, that was the result of 8 years of destruction by the Bush crime family. Don't forget, how long ago was it when Clinton, say what you will, when he left the office of the presidency, he handed off to the twit and the killer budget surpluses as far as the eye could see. What was it supposed to be? $1 or $2 trillion in budget surpluses over the next 10 years. And now look what has happened. And of course, because most people in this country are absolutely stupid and ignorant where it concerns this sort of stuff, and willfully so, the Republicans are able to spin this as Barack Obama's deal. Right? He's been in office for what? 9 months, 8 months, 10 months, what has it been? 7 months? And it's all his, right? But Norquist, the pig who famously said, our goal is to shrink government to the size where we can drown it in a bathtub. Grover, you son of a bitch, you're almost there, aren't you? Huh? Norquist is a real thug. Wasn't he investigated for, he was investigated for something. Oh my God. An escaped indictment, didn't he? I think so. He became the executive director of something called the National Taxpayers Union. And then he found when he was still going to Harvard, right? He founded Americans for Tax Reform in 1985. Ronald Reagan asked him to do that, and he's headed that organization ever since. He was that's right. And from 1985 to 1988, he was an economic advisor to the Angolan leader Jonas Savimbi, and during this period, he was registered with the United States Department of Justice as a foreign agent of Angola. He is currently on the board of directors of the NRA and the American Conservative Union, which is another nest of right-wing neo-Nazis. He is chairman emeritus of something called the Islamic Free Market Institute. That means give us your goddamn oil or we're coming bomb your country, too. Now, it was Norquist, along with Bill Kristol, Ralph Reed, Clint Bolick, and Dave McIntosh, one of the so-called Gang of Five, identified in Nina Easton's 2000 book by that name, which gives a history of leaders of the modern conservative movement. He's been described, this is according to Wikipedia, as a thumb-in-the-eye radical right-winger, and so on and so on and so on. In 1999, he was the one who got early support for then Texas Governor George Bush. He's been involved with Karl Rove for a couple of decades. It just goes on and on. If he has not been investigated, he should be. This guy is a real anti-American. Grover Norquist is one of the leading lights of the neo-Nazi movement in this country, has been for a long time. He wants to see America totally destroyed, and replaced with a corporatist slash fascist structure that is some people call neo-serfdom or neo, what's the word I'm looking for? what? That's it. Neo-feudalism. Neo-serfdom-ism. But Grover Norquist is the type of guy that in a rational society would have been shut down a long time ago. He would have been denied access to any form of public outlet because he is such a threat to what remains of the United States. And there's not that much left. There really isn't. But when I heard about Obama's budget deficit and it's looking out over the next 8, 9, 10 years, it's going to continue and it's going to get worse. And this is a result of the damage that an America hater like Grover Norquist and his thugs have done to the country. You know, a group most of whom are elitist sons of bitches who took their their educations at some of the most elite schools in the United States and completely perverted and twisted everything that they learned and turned it against the country that gave them an opportunity, to be leaders of a different, different sort. Grover Norquist is of that group who said, no, I'm going to kill my own country. He's a goddamn nation killer, is what Grover Norquist is. He really is. And it doesn't make any difference if it's this nation or some other nation. Norquist is another one of those people that belong in the ranks of the Axis Sallies and the Tokyo Roses. He hates the United States with a passion that comes through periodically and especially comes through when he makes a statement like, we are going to reduce government to the size where we can drown it in a bathtub. He apparently is an anarchist. I don't think he's ever served in any kind of public capacity, anybody, not the military, not the Boy Scouts, not the YMCA, not the National Forest Service. He's never picked up a piece of trash alongside the road. He's a devourer, a user, a taker, and he gives nothing back. And the son of a bitch wants to take from the people who can least afford to have more taken from them. The handicapped, the poor, the homeless, the people on Medicaid. This is the kind of pig that Grover Norquist and the rest of his ilk, this is what they do. They prey on the weakest, the ones that least able to defend themselves. And knowing that they are going to incite open rebellion at some point, they know this. And this would be the payoff for them. This is what Grover Norquist is waiting for. When finally the people who have been so oppressed and suppressed and denigrated and treated like dirt under this son of a bitch's foot, he can't wait for the day when those millions of people say enough and rise up so that Grover can sit back on his ass and watch as whoever's president has to declare martial law. And there will be lots and lots and lots of Americans killed when that happens. And Norquist is lusting after that moment. He wants it the way most normal people would like to have sex. Norquist wants this. He wants to see government utterly destroyed. He wants to see chaos take its place. He wants to see anarchy. Because Norquist, like a lot of these real elitists, knows that he has many hiding places that he can take his ass into and stay out of the fray. He's no more into defending anything or serving anything. He wants destruction, not creative destruction. He wants destruction for the pure sexual appeal of it. And there are others like this. Limbaugh is the same way. So is the suicider, Glenn Beck. And so is the rapidly expanding Bunny Ranch hanger-outer, Sean Hannity. Have you seen those pictures yet? Jesus, God. The family values dude, right? So people like Grover Norquist, who are educated, they develop people who are not educated, like Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, George Bush, Dick Cheney, and then fuel their idiocy by continuing to pump into them all this neoconservative corporatist fascism. And you got to give Norquist that. He's excellent at destroying things. He's excellent at tearing things down. He is a class A America hater. He wants to see the country dead. He wants to see it replaced with a form of corporatist fascism that will guarantee him a position at the top of the food chain. And they have just about succeeded. I think Norquist and his thugs are, every chance they get, they probably high-five each other or grab each other's ass in that kind of rich boy locker room grab-ass stuff. You know what I'm talking about. The white boys do it, that little grab on the butt. When they look around, especially when they get a report from the White House itself, the Republicans say, well, $1.3 trillion deficit, and the White House comes out and says, no, it's more like $1.6 trillion. And that, like I say, that is like sex to Grover Norquist. It is. This is what sustains him. This is like food, shelter, clothing, sex, water. To people like Norquist, they are destroyers. That's all they're about, is to destroy things. And they do it for sport. After taking advantage of the system, by getting his Harvard education, if he really has one, that's what Wikipedia says, he went to Harvard. I don't know and don't care. But after doing that, he turns on the country that gave him all these opportunities and decides to destroy it. There's a name for people like that, and there's also consequences for people like that.
I'm waiting for the light, seems like I'm in the middle. Something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe in. Oh, oh. Cradled by the hands of faith, the faith that sometimes wraps around to the
voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Now, in light of the America-hating Grover Norquist, whose anti-American rhetoric so clearly stated what the Republicans were about 20 years ago, in light of all that, and the fact that they're pretty close to pulling it off at this point, Stephen Perlstein, writing at tomorrow's Washington Post, says Michael Steele, chairman of the Republican National Committee this week, revealed a secret Republican plan that would end up eliminating all federal farm subsidies, closing down Yellowstone and Yosemite National Park, selling off the interstate highway system, canceling Head Start, canceling subsidized school lunches, and canceling the entire college loan program. The plan came to light as a result of an op-ed piece this week in the Washington Post in which the party chairman, Michael Steele, committed the Republicans to spending an ever-increasing share of the federal budget and the national income on Medicare. When combined with other Republican promises, you know, to balance a budget, protect defense spending, and never, ever, ever raise anyone's taxes, the inescapable inference is that the government would run out of money for every other domestic program sometime around 2035. Steele's stunning announcement brings the conservative strategy of starving the beast to a new level. Under the guise of protecting the elderly, Republicans hope to realize their dream of eliminating half a dozen cabinet agencies, firing tens of thousands of government workers, and ending government regulation as we know it. Steele's op-ed was the latest salvo in his party's campaign to defeat Obama's health care reform effort at all costs and build support, public support, for a Republican alternative that remains to this day a closely held secret. The new seniors' health care Bill of Rights, however, hints at the outlines of the Republican domestic strategy. Steele promised that under the Republican health care plan, runaway Medicare spending would continue untreated and unabated. Not only would that mean no cuts in benefits, but it would ensure that reimbursement rates to doctors, hospitals, and drug companies would continue to rise faster than inflation, regardless of how much they earn or how unnecessary or wasteful the services they provide. Any effort to contain future spending growth, Republicans now believe, is nothing more than a raid on Medicare, the government-run health plan that Republicans were against before they were for it. The country's top Republican officials also vowed to cut off all federal funding for research to determine what are the most effective treatments for heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and even that new scourge, restless leg syndrome. Left unclear was whether Steele prefers to have such research done by the pharmaceutical and medical device industries, but one suspects that is the case. On the issue of end-of-life care, Steele was uncompromising. In a Republican world, no government funds could be used to pay doctors to provide information about living wills, hospices, or palliative care, whether seniors and their families ask for it or not. He said He explained in articulating the new philosophy, quote, government programs that seem benign at first can become anything but. Once back in power, look for Republicans to apply the same approach to issues such as flu vaccinations, disaster relief, and air traffic control. It's all going down the pipes, truth seekers. Pearlstein goes on, according to Steele, Republicans will also seek to outlaw, quote, any effort to ration health care based on age, end quote. Oh, Christ. You don't have to be a lawyer like Steele to understand that would effectively make it a federal crime for any hospital to refuse a heart transplant to a 95-year-old or for any doctor to refuse to prescribe Viagra to a sexually precocious seventh grader. Although Steele did not indicate what the penalty would be, he did not rule out death. Indeed, Republicans seem determined to preserve the uniquely American system under which health care is rationed today on the basis of employment status and ability to pay. According to the respected Institute of Medicine, this market-based approach to rationing has held the number of untimely deaths each year to a mere 18,000 uninsured souls. Thanks to Medicare, all of those victims are younger than 65. But apparently, that is the kind of age-based rationing that real Republicans can embrace. After reading his broadside, one is left wondering exactly what health reform plan Steele thought he was attacking. At one point, Steele claims that Democrats would prevent Americans from keeping their doctors or an insurance plan they like. Later, he warns that government will soon be setting caps on how many heart surgeries could be performed in the United States each year. Where is he getting this stuff? Has the chairman of the Republican Party somehow gotten a hold of a top-secret plan for a government takeover of the health care system that Republican operatives snatched during a break-in at Democratic National Committee headquarters? If all that sounds like a spurious and unsubstantiated allegation, it is. And it fits right in with the cynical lies, distortions, and political scare tactics that Steele and other Republicans have used to poison the national debate over health reform. Have you no shame, sir? Have you no shame? Stephen Pearlstein, writing at the Washington Post. Famous line to Joe McCarthy, have you no shame, sir? The Republican Party, the neocons, the right-wingers, the neo-fascists, the neo-Nazis, the corporatists, whatever you want to call them, whether it's Michael Steele, Grover Norquist, or the drug-addled Rush Limbaugh, or the suicide, potential suicide, Glenn Beck, the goal is to destroy the country. They hate this country. They hate the freedom. They hate the attempts at equality. They hate the fact that people of color and women can make choices regarding their privacy, regarding their careers, regarding their lives. These white people, these white males who are so threatened by anything not of their race or their gender, have been trying for, at least in recent modern history, for the past 25, 30 years, to utterly and absolutely destroy America. And I ask myself, and it's time for you to ask yourself the same question, are you going to let them? It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. Inside the CIA's haphazard interrogation program. That's a headline on an Associated Press piece by Pamela Hess and Matt Apuzzo. I didn't know this. You know, Cheney's been walking around talking about highly trained professionals who understood their obligations under the law. That's the interrogation program was run by those people. Highly trained professionals who understood their obligations under the law. That's according to Dick Cheney. Well, guess what? The documents recently released prove that to be a goddamn lie. The AP writers point out, with 2 weeks of training, about half the time it takes to become a truck driver, the CIA certified its spies as interrogation experts and handed them the keys to the most coercive tactics in the CIA's arsenal. Did you know that? I didn't know that. 2 weeks of training. According to the AP, it was a patchwork program in which rules kept shifting and the goals often were unclear. At times, the interrogators went too far, even beyond the wide latitude they were given under the Bush administration's flexible guidelines. It talks about waterboarding and mock executions and family members being threatened or beaten up, hints of rape to the detainee. It was a terrifying process. The interrogators, those are the CIA people, were required to sign documents saying they understood the rules and would comply with them. Yet there were no rules, and the interrogators were given room to improvise and make decisions about how much humanity to show to these detainees. So when former thug bastard Dick Cheney says the interrogation program was run by, quote, highly trained professionals who understand their obligations under the law, end quote, these documents clearly show otherwise. Cheney is a monster. Cheney is like Grover Norquist. These people are destroyers. They are utter and absolute destroyers. The entire function of Dick Cheney during the 8 years he ran this government was to destroy whatever he could get his hands on, internally, externally, foreign, domestic, just flat out evil. There are very few people in this country's recent political history that you could identify as pure or purely evil. Maybe, I don't know, pick a number, 10, 15. Dick Cheney is right at the top of that mound of worms. He is just defines evil, viciousness, hatred of his own country, his own people, absolute hatred. I don't understand. The CIA people could only speculate about what the detainees should know as they went about their torture because the CIA had no information about Al-Qaeda. They didn't know what an Al-Qaeda was. So these torture boys who had been given 2 weeks training had to guess instead of trying to get information, they tried to get confessions. Confess that you were going to blow up LAX. Confess you were going to blow up, the subway system in New York. Confess, goddamn you, or we will continue to torture you. That's the information they got. Phony confessions. And according to the AP, some in the CIA correctly feared that the existence of the programs they were involved in would leak out someday. Others worried they'd be identified by name in news stories. The inspector general, the CIA IG, wrote, quote, one officer expressed concern that one day agency officers will wind up on some wanted list to appear before the world court for war crimes. And according to the CIA inspector general, another interrogator said 10 years from now, we're going to be sorry we're doing this. And this evil son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, said, oh, well, it was run by highly trained professionals who understand their obligations under the law. And Mr. Obama's attempts to bring criminal charges is undermining the security and safety of the United States, if you will. So I think all good neocons, corporatists, and fascists should rise up and bring this to a goddamn stop. Do you hear me? This is a sick man. This is an evil man. You know, I'm willing to cut people slack when they are mentally deranged. But when the derangement goes through a metamorphosis and leaves derangement, like a caterpillar leaving the world of caterpillarism and becomes a moth, a death moth. Dick Cheney, his metamorphosis was from derangement to evil. He's an evil, evil man. And like Grover Norquist, wants to see this country utterly and absolutely murdered, destroyed. Jesus, God, where do these people come from? They come from hell, I guess. And then that crazed Michelle Bachmann. Fast and pray to stop this horrible health insurance plan. Oh, and she'll probably go off into tongues. Shalomani, Hondo, Melobandinda, Hansili, Hansili, Galabachondo, Lila. Jesus, God.
And then Ernest Angsley will appear from the center of the class.
Say baby. Go,
baby, baby Jesus. Say baby, you're healed. You don't need Obamacare. He just wants your penis. Baby.
All right. The number again is 877-996-2556. Rob is in Orange County, California. Hey, Rob.
Mike, it's such an honor to talk to you. Your passion is just—it's amazing. It's just—it makes me laugh. You know,
good, yay! I'm glad it does.
Yeah, you know, it's important to be able to laugh at sometimes, you know, things that are so horrifying and so evil. And you know, for them to be in power the way they were for 8 years and to do so much damage. And so much killing and so much destruction, and they're so proud of it. You know, like it was in the name of anger. It was in the name of let's get them back. It was in the name of 9/11 was so heinous that we are now allowed to be more heinous. It was so bad what happened to us, and so many people were killed and suffered, which is true, which is true, that we are now allowed to be subhuman. We are allowed to decide who is subhuman and torture and threaten and instill fear. I mean, you got to be kidding me. This is the United States of America?
No, not really. And you know the terrible irony? It was the incompetence, if not the criminal activity, of this Bush administration that brought the attack on this country to begin with.
Oh, I know. I terrorist acts have been happening forever. How about the Indians? You know, the reality is that bad things happen. Bad things happen. People do bad things. People get murdered. Bad things happen. Everybody wake up. It doesn't mean that now you have to be the person that lives the rest of your life to be able to say, we are the greatest country in the world. We have never done anything wrong. We have never done anything wrong. Anything that happens to our country because we are democratic and we have Coca-Cola.
Yeah, but you know, and I know, Rob, and I think a lot of people know, this country is no more a democracy than Germany after 1933 was a democracy. It just simply isn't. Hey, thanks, Rob. I appreciate you checking in, all right? Take care. Cassie is in Texas. Oh, hey, it's our teen correspondent. Cassie, I haven't heard from you for a while. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
Are you still a teenager?
I am a senior in high school.
Wow, man.
I will be 18 in November.
No, that's impossible. Time just rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
What's up, Cassie?
Let's see. Lots of stuff is up, but I have so much hope that the...
Hey, Cassie, hold on a second. The clock got up on me here, and we got to take a break. All right, will you stay right there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll come back to you as soon as we return from the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just look around. A thousand years to build, and now it's coming down. If this were a movie, I'd say the acting's pretty bad. Everyone's stiff. Dialogue so sad. We'll be right back.
This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it's our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Past the hour, we're talking with Cassie in Texas. All right, Cassie, what you got on your mind? What you got on your mind?
Wanted to talk to you about how the crazy right wingers are trying to take over Texas and the whole country again.
Again, always. You've been talking about this since when did we first talk? When you were 12 or 13?
13, I think.
Yeah, 13. Yeah, okay, well, what's the newest thing in Texas, Cassie?
The newest thing in Texas is that they are going to add all of the moral majority and the right wing and the and Newt Gingrich and all of this stuff to textbooks.
Oh, that's right.
The textbooks and take out, like, Cesar Chavez and George Washington and, like, anybody who might be liberal.
Yeah, yeah, I read about that. One of these right-wing thugs complained that there are too many social activists in the history books and not enough right-wing neo-Nazis. And that's really a shame. They not only do they want to destroy your future, Cassie, they also want to tamper with your past. And they do that by controlling the present. And this is the Orwellian approach. This is what Winston Smith, the guy who worked in the Ministry of Truth, did. This is what his job was. And it's a shame that it's happening in Texas. Thank God you're a senior in high school. You're about out of there, right?
Yep. Just about.
Man, how's your family?
Insane. Insane. I'm not living with my brother anymore.
Oh, you're not?
Uh-uh.
Oh, what happened? Damn it. You didn't get a divorce, did you, so to speak?
Well, no. I'm living with another family that is near my school.
Yeah? Is that working out for you okay?
It is. It's working out really well.
Yeah. Well, I think most...
he needs to get his life together.
Yeah, I hear you. I think most families, though, can... Or most people who are members of families, I know that damn sure applies to me, can at some point in their lives make the claim that their family is completely insane or dysfunctional or all belong chained in the attic. So, yeah, I know what you mean. How's school going?
School's going really well.
Yeah.
I'm in National Honor Society. I've got great grades. I'm taking a whole bunch of AP courses. I'm going to earn as many college credits as I can.
Good for you.
While I'm still in high school and make college a little cheaper.
Do you know where you might go to school beyond high school?
I have a list of 26 colleges and I have to start paring it down before I send the applications in, or it's going to get crazy.
Yeah, it is going to. That's great, Cass. You made the National Honor Society. Oh, my God, I tried so hard and just couldn't do it way back in the day when I was in high school. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm still blogging, and I'm still, you know, telling people what's what, and organizing and...
How can people get to your blog site, Cassie?
Okay, Freckles Cassie. So it's two words, but push them together. Freckles.
Freckles Cassie.
Cassie.wordpress.com.
Dot word what?
WordPress.
WordPress.com. FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com.
.com. And I've got two posts. I got two recent posts up there now. One of them is about this girl from Ohio who ran away from home, the Muslim girl who ran away from home to convert to Christianity and is in Florida now, and it's like all over the right-wing blogs and it's all over right-wing TV, and it's crazy. It's like, leave this girl alone.
Yeah.
You know, let the social workers and the judges do their job.
Yeah, the right wingers, that's just a story that they love to get their talons into, right?
Yeah.
Freckles or Freckle?
Freckles.
plural, FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com.
Yes.
FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com. Okay, I wrote it down. And I'm going to go to your site and check out what you're doing. So
the other post that's on there right now, the site, which is the second post down, is a letter to Levi Johnston.
Oh, yeah.
You know who he is?
Oh, yeah. That's Sarah Palin's son-in-law.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the father of Bristol's
yes.
baby.
Uh-huh.
But to him and his sister, because their mom pleaded guilty last week.
To drug, running a meth lab, yeah.
It wasn't meth, it was prescription stuff.
Oh, was it? I thought it was a meth lab, yeah.
But I wrote a whole letter to them about what it's like to have a mom go to prison. And, my advice to them about that they should go to Alateen and they should...
Hey, Cassie, hold on a second again, because I got a break here and I want to hear the end of this. Just stay right there. We'll be right back. What's right?
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. We're talking with Cassie in Texas. And Cassie, it just occurred to me, a lot of people don't know our relationship, or your relationship, this audience, I should say. Cassie called us a couple of years ago, and she was living with her brother because her mom was in prison and her brother was about to be shipped out to Iraq, and Cassie and her brother tried to apply for a hardship deferment, if I remember all this right. And, and the military at first said no. And a lot of people, went to bat to prevent, because that would have put you in foster care.
Right.
And, your brother did not have to go to Iraq. And your family, such as it was at the time, remained intact. Is your mom still in prison?
Yeah, actually, she had a parole hearing, and this is awful. What the judge said is that she can leave jail,
mm-hmm.
but she has to go to a halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
Except that there's no room at any of the halfway houses because they keep defunding them because it's Texas.
Oh, Jesus, Cassie.
But what she is going to do is go to a privately run jail while she's waiting to go to the...
What is a privately... Well, I realize most prisons, not most, but a good number of prisons are run by, like, Security Corporation of America. You know, it's the prison
right.
industrial complex now. You mean your mom's
right.
going to go to one of those?
Yeah, she's going to end up in one of those because where she's at now, mm-hmm. they don't have psychology services and they don't have drug services, which is what she needs.
Yeah.
Much more than jail.
Yeah, well.
Certainly, and much more than just sort of like being back in life after, 8 years.
So many people in prison, as far as I'm concerned, don't belong there. They need help. They need therapy, counseling, drug rehab programs, but we don't give a damn about that anymore in this country, Cassie. You know that. You've had firsthand experience.
Yeah.
Well, now, do you want to tell us anything about the estrangement from your brother? What? I thought you guys were pretty close. Or do you want to just leave that alone? I mean, that's okay.
Well, I mean, I can just say that when there's a lot of violence in your family,
mm-hmm.
You grow up around a lot of violence. Sometimes it's hard to learn how to have relationships that don't include that.
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
That says everything that needs to be said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. Loud and clear. National Honor Society, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if I here, let me give you a virtual pat on the back for that one. Way to go, kid.
Thank you.
I know a lot of people who were interested in you 5 years ago when you first called this program. I'm just thrilled to hear that. And I know I damn sure am. I mean, come on, Cassie. That's,
I'm still in email contact with a whole bunch of them.
Are you?
Uh-huh.
All the people that used to...
The people who helped me write the letters when I was in eighth grade.
Oh, my God.
And they helped me write letters to the senators and the congressmen and
figure out
what I was asking for and how to phrase it and...
Wow.
How to sound completely pathetic, but not be completely pathetic.
Right. Yeah, that's an art, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, college applications are going to be the same thing. How to sound pathetic and not be pathetic.
And not be pathetic, right. What schools are on the top of your list or you think will be on the top of your list when you sort them all out?
I am going to get over my fear of cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the good schools are in the north.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely, definitely, definitely leaving Texas.
You're definitely what?
Leaving Texas.
Yeah, well, there's a surprise. What about the West Coast? What about, the California schools?
I haven't looked too much there. I've mostly looked at things in Virginia and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Small colleges.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to get lost, huh?
I don't want to get lost, and I don't want, like, a research university. I want a college.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, you're good. Whatever you wind up doing, Cassie, for your next step in education, you're going to do it just fine. I think anyone you've come in contact with knows that about you. And, you know, the other thing that really impressed me then and impresses me now is your coolness, your ability to really handle, if that's the right word, some really unsettling stuff that's happened in your life. I have a lot of respect for you, and I think a lot of the people who came in contact with you back then and remain in contact, I think that's the one word that pops into my head most when I'm reminded of what your struggle has been for the past 5 or 6 years. It's just absolute, utter respect for what you've managed to accomplish, Cassie.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and good on you. I mean, good on you.
No, I get crazy once in a while, but...
Oh, no! No! I'll bet you do. What do you do? I'll bet you use your tea bag twice. That would be really crazy.
No, no, no. Like, things like...
Oh, that's right.
I have a really hard time with Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Like that kind of crazy.
Oh, that kind of crazy. Like, you mean like maybe crying and getting upset and getting angry and, oh, no, I understand. There's probably going to be an awful lot of that for you to deal with over the course of your life for sure. But I think you'll be able to handle it. Speaking of that, what does it look like when your mom gets out? Are you going to be able to reconnect? Are the two of you, I should say, going to be able to reconnect?
Well, she's not allowed to be my guardian. She lost
right.
that
right. Well, you're too old.
I'm going to be 18.
Right.
In November, which is only 2 months away.
But but she'll always be your mom.
She will always be my mom, and I hope that she can be there for me as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, I hope she can be there for herself. I have a lot of aunties. I have a lot of people who've kind of stepped in and filled in some of those mom kind of roles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay. But I just want her to get her stuff together.
Sure. Sure. That comes through loud and clear, Cassie. And I know that's your hope. I don't think you have any.
I don't know if she's clean or sober. Right. I don't know if she's using. I don't know if she's still angry at the world. I don't know. You know. I don't know who she's blaming for her problems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope she takes a new opportunity seriously, and I hope she gets, I hope she, you know, wants to pick a path that will help. I think that if she wants to pick a healthy path, that the people will be in her life to do that, to help her with that.
Yeah.
But it's my fear, you know, an awful lot of addicts never get sober.
Yeah, that's true. Well, as far as you are concerned, though, I'll tell you, Cassie, there's an awful lot of negative energy floating around in this country right now. And you know, I pick up on a lot of it because of the nature of what I do for a living. And I have to tell you that having a conversation with you just dispels that negativity for a couple of minutes during the time that you and I talk, because you continue to amaze me. I mean, you really, really do.
Well, thank you.
You're a very impressive young woman. And, even though we've never met, man, I just
we might.
Yeah, we might someday.
I'm looking. Kathy didn't tell you.
What?
I'm looking at Emory.
Emory. All right. Well, if you come to Emory, that's a good school. That's a good school, Cassie.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, if you do come to Emory and you need,
and I have had all these conversations. She didn't tell you.
She hasn't told me. No. Oh, well, that's one thing. Kathy likes to just let me feel my way through a phone call, you know. And
no, not today.
Yeah? In the past.
I had conversations, the last few months.
Oh.
When I started putting my lists together.
Well, that's cool. That's great. No, she... You know, and if you've been emailing back and forth with her, I assume you mean Kathy. You know, we have separate email thingies going on. I mean, she can have a correspondent like you that just this incredible correspondence, and you know, I have no idea what's going on, and vice versa. Cassie, we got to go. Here comes another commercial break. Thank you so much for calling in. Don't let so much time go by. Okay.
Okay.
Before you call in again.
All right.
All right, sweetheart. Thanks a lot. You take care, all right?
You too. Bye.
Okay, Cassie. Bye. Sharon Gordy, Bruce Emberg, Kay Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay, the executive producer. You know, the program that follows this one online, stick around, you'll hear Head On Radio Network with Bob Kincaid, a rebroadcast of his program earlier this evening. And Bob also is very familiar with Cassie. I believe she... He and she have spoken over the years on his program also. And the story of Cassie, you know, I guess you gathered it very quickly. She, just out of the blue, wasn't it, Kathy? She called the program one time about 5 years ago. Yeah, it was on Teen Night, that's right, which we're going to do again at some point. But it was open for phone calls only from kids 13 through 17. And she called in. And we were talking for a while, and I think she was in eighth grade at the time, or seventh grade. And she said her mom was in prison, and she lived with her brother, and her brother was in the military, I think National Guard or Reserves or something, and he was being shipped out to Iraq. He'd gotten his orders, and Cassie was upset, and so was her brother, because it meant that the adult in her life was leaving, and Cassie would have been put in foster care. She had no idea with whom. She would wind up in the clutches of... I believe it was Texas at the time, the Texas Department of Family and Services, which, you know, like, I'm sorry if you work in family services in any state, but you know what they're like. They're underfunded. They are unsupervised properly. I'm not saying that they're not real good, dedicated people who break their backs trying to work in these departments of family and youth services or whatever they're called in your state. But anyway, Cassie was scared. And didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, a bunch of listeners, and I mean a bunch, started contacting her through our program here and helping, as she said, helping her write letters, helping her go through the right channels to get her brother a hardship deferment or whatever it's referred to now, so he wouldn't have to ship out and go overseas. He could continue to fulfill whatever military contract he had, but could do it in the States, stay where he was, so that Cassie would not lose the last adult in her life. I forget what the story was on her father. Was he dead or something, Kathy? I don't remember. So she built a network of people who were listening that night, a network that continues after all these years. And everything that this child, now a young woman, has done has just been in defiance of the hand that was seemed to have been dealt her. I mean, the whole thing impresses me. Like I said to her, she just blows me away. There are, how many reasons do we need to have looked at a child like Cassie who did not do what Cassie's done and find a million excuses why that child sunk beneath the waves? We could blame it on anything, but Cassie did not sink. And I don't know. I have a sense, and I'm sure those of you who have been in contact with her or following her over the years, I think you'll agree with this. Cassie is going to do something in her life that is going to be just this side of or just the other side of spectacular. You know it, and I know it. It's going to happen. You know it. Her blog site, again, if you didn't write it down, freckles.cassie.wordpress.com. freckles.cassie.wordpress.com. And I've gotten about 7 emails since she got on the phone of people who have been in touch with her, people who know who she is, maybe not in touch with her, but know about this this kid's struggle as she went from, you know, a girl who was on the verge of panic. I mean, it was, you could hear it. I mean, she wasn't crying and screaming into the phone that night, but she didn't know what to do. And so many people who were listening that night, just like Victor, the young kid that was, well, young man that was in prison. He was first in Miami, then the Virgin Islands, I believe, and all the people that went to bat for him, because I started reading his letters on the program. But Cassie was just, what a story. What a story. But here is a 13-year-old at the time, and I think she had just turned 13. Maybe not. But was not going to be ground down. Was not going, the story just blows me away. I've always hoped that my children, although they've not had to face that kind of adversity in their lives, but that they would somehow have that kind of determination. And I think about that a lot for Molly, you know, my 5-year-old now, because God only knows what she's going to have to deal with. But Cassie is almost like a dream, except for the fact that she's very, very, very real. So... I'm glad she called in, and I hope she'll continue to do that. What a kid. What a young woman. Not a kid. Go to her website or her blog site, freckleskassie.wordpress.com. We're out of time, aren't we? About time to listen. If we didn't get to your call, I apologize, but we will we'll pick up tomorrow and do it again, right? So, take care, okay? Have a good evening. I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.